Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, both of our guests were once some of the youngest mayors in America, who both created real national profiles out of being mayors of sort of medium-sized cities. The first guest is now the Secretary of Transportation for the United States, Pete Buttigieg, who got so much attention during his presidential campaign and has become one of our most frequent guests here on The Issue Is. It's our first time talking to him as a member of the administration. And later, we talk with Michael Tubbs, the former mayor of Stockton, who is now helping to create guaranteed basic income experiments in cities and counties all across California and across the country. But let's begin with Secretary Buttigieg back again to talk about this infrastructure plan that the Biden team is trying to get passed, that he is trying to negotiate each and every day with Republicans and with Democrats who are on the fence about it. We talked to him about all that and about what it's like living in D.C. and being a part of the Biden administration and having a boss. Here it is, our conversation with now Secretary Pete. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we're joined by Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and the issue is infrastructure. Secretary of Transportation helping to lead negotiations with Republicans. Where are we at, and what does it all mean for California? Plus, Governor Newsom announces millions to help fund guaranteed basic income experiments in California. So how is that going to work? The governor's point man, Michael Tubbs, is with us. What the rest of the state can learn from his experiment in Stockton, as the issue is, starts right now.
Broadcasting across California, California's only statewide political show. You're watching The Issue Is.
There's so many candidates. Why you?
Well, I'm not like the others.
We first met Mayor Pete Buttigieg in March of 2019, and he'd do more interviews with us than any other California show. One of the highlights was this, a live town hall event on the campus of USC in the middle of his presidential campaign. Well, now Mayor Pete is Secretary Pete, sworn in here by the Vice President of the United States from California, Kamala Harris. Secretary Pete Buttigieg joins us for the first time as a member of the administration. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thanks. It's nice to be with you again.
All right. Let's start by talking about the $2.3 trillion infrastructure package that you are helping to negotiate. It's part of a proposed $6 trillion in spending this year by the Biden administration, if you include COVID relief and social programs. So what specifically, Mr. Secretary, does this plan mean for California? What does California looking at if this thing passes?
Well, think about all of the forms of transportation that mean so much to California. I mean, literally everything we're considering in this plan, from roads and bridges to ports and airports to rail and transit, are all a big part of how Californians get around. And that's just the transportation piece. This is a vision for everything from water infrastructure to internet infrastructure to care infrastructure. So it's safe to say that if you ever have the experience of going from point A to point B, from work to home, from home to school, you will benefit from the investments in the president's vision. Look, the reality is we have been coasting for a very long time as a country off of investments in infrastructure decisions that were made years ago, even decades ago. It's catching up to us. And this is the chance to make a generational investment in the infrastructure that's actually going to make us competitive for the future, creating millions of jobs while we're at it, and helping to confront the climate crisis before it's too late.
So where are we at in the negotiations? You're a big part of them.
So Senate Republicans put forward one alternative. We believe, of course, in the president's vision, but we're open to different ideas. And there are also a lot of negotiations happening in the committees, both in the House and in the Senate, between the members themselves. The next few days, and I think the next weeks, will have a lot of these conversations and discussions. That's a healthy thing. But the president has also made very clear that doing nothing is not an option. And we can't keep doing this indefinitely. We got to deliver results, because Americans are seeing every day the consequences of us falling short on transportation infrastructure. We've fallen out of the top 10 as a country. We're actually in 13th place. And so there's no time to lose. We've got to act. And that's the sense of urgency that's propelling the conversations I'm having literally every day, and others in the administration and the president too, constantly with members of both parties, with members of the House and the Senate, with mayors, governors, about how to get this done.
You know, there are some on the Republican Party who are suggesting that maybe the best thing to do would be to split this package into two. Some of the more traditional infrastructure plans, maybe pass a $1 trillion plan on that and do some of the more social programs like childcare, other aspects later on. Do you support that idea? Does that make sense to you? Try to get a big bipartisan win?
We believe all of these things fit together, but we are open to different ideas about how to get it done. The point is we in fact have to get these things done. It is so important at a time when you see, for example, a bridge at the point of failure or at risk of failure in Memphis that is causing a huge disruption in that region. The Colonial Pipeline reminding us of the general importance of resilient infrastructure. Texas, where because of grid issues, we had American citizens having to melt snowballs in their bathtubs to be able to flush their toilets. There's an enormous sense of urgency here, and we got to do these things quickly. Now, in terms of the legislative mechanics, the politics of how to do it, there's a lot of ways to get there, but this is a time to think big, and this is a time to be bold.
If the Republicans don't come along, do you have enough Democratic votes right now to get this done?
Well, I think that there are not just a lot of Democrats, but Americans on both sides of the aisle who want to see this happen. What I'm finding, though, is that just because something is hugely popular in both parties around the country doesn't mean that's automatically reflected in Washington. That's why we're focusing so much on talking both with Democratic colleagues and with Republicans. We definitely see enormous support to make something happen. Exactly what shape it'll take, obviously, that's exactly what these discussions are about in the next few days.
Well, here's something that's unpopular with both parties: high gas prices. You are the Secretary of Transportation. This is the main way that people in Southern California and Northern California get around. I'm curious, what can be done about those high gas prices right now?
Well, one of the things that we need to do is make sure that Americans have options. Look, most people don't drive electric cars, so gas prices have a huge impact on most Americans. Now, that's driven by all kinds of factors, from global demand for oil to weather events. But what we know is when gas prices increase, everybody feels that economic pain. And when there were the temporary supply disruptions due to the Colonial Pipeline issue, we acted in every way that we could to help move gas over water, over land. We made it more flexible to be able to move it in trucks. But we also have to have broader strategies as a country to have diverse sources of ways to get around and complete this transition that we're in the middle of right now toward renewable energy. Look, we know that the future is not going to look like the past. The question is whether we can get there in a way that actually creates jobs, which the American Jobs Plan does, through everything from electrifying vehicles to making our grid and our cities more resilient.
So just real bottom line, if that plan passes, paint a picture. What does the future look like in California and in this country?
Well, Californians can expect better roads and bridges, better airports, no longer having to feel like our country's airports are second rate compared to what other countries have. Rail and transit options, where we've been expected to settle for less, getting people to where they need to be. You can expect a lot more jobs across the state of California and across the country. And this is one very important thing I want to emphasize. According to independent economists' study of the American Jobs Plan, of the millions of jobs we're going to support and create here, the majority of them are available to people whether you have a college degree or not. So this is largely a blue-collar vision for the future. These are the kinds of benefits that we stand to gain, and maybe the biggest one of all is we'll be able to look back on the early 2020s and say this is when America finally got ahead of the climate crisis and won the future in an equitable way. That's the opportunity in front of us. I truly believe it's a once-in-a-lifetime moment on par with when they built the Transcontinental Railroad that opened California in so many ways to the rest of the country, or the interstate highway system at a time when it would have taken 2 weeks to get from California to Washington, D.C. by car. We changed that. Now's another moment where we've got to envision what the future of infrastructure looks like and recognize it won't be the same as the past.
Let's talk for a moment about you, because we've been talking with you since you were a relatively unknown mayor from South Bend, Indiana. Let's talk about your first time in the Oval Office. The real first time you were wheeled in virtually because of COVID restrictions at the time, which is kind of weird. It's quite the image there. But when you went in for real, for the first time, sat next to the president, what went through your mind?
Well, it's a heady thing. I hadn't been in the Oval Office before, and it's a moving experience as an American to be in that space where the president is trusted by the American people with making so many life and death decisions. But to be honest, mostly I was just thinking about the job that I was there to do. I'm part of this incredible team that the president has put together with the vice president and this cabinet, he's got a pretty tall order for us in terms of the infrastructure work that we're doing and a lot of other things that he has assigned to us. So in many ways, it was a heads-down moment, trying to make sure that the meeting went well, that we were getting the right kind of information. And every time I go there, there's that mix of the awe of the importance of what goes on in the White House and the simple fact that we're there with a job to do, and the president expects all of us to deliver for the American people, because we know that's what the American people will hold all of us accountable for in the future.
Right. You campaigned against Joe Biden. At the time, you told me that we need a new generation of leadership. You're now working with him, the oldest president in American history. How is he different than maybe you thought during the campaign? And is there value in having an older president?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, if you look at the discipline, the focus, and the effectiveness of this administration, it's certainly humbling to see just how much that experience in terms of the relationships and the understanding of what's happened before has, I think, served this president and leadership team well. But the other thing I'll say is that he has been very intentional and very, I think, generous about cultivating a new generation of leaders in this country. And he's somebody who really envisions this as a transformational moment. He is somebody who I think maybe more than was expected of him as a candidate is very focused on the future, thinking big, delivering in a bold way. I mean, we're already thinking ahead to the next hill, which is the jobs plan, but the rescue plan alone will make such a positive difference in American life. And so, I feel that I'm part of this incredible team and that we have, look, I haven't had a boss in a very long time, right? I was a mayor for two terms and then a candidate. But I love being part of this team that he's put together.
What's the biggest difference between South Bend and Washington?
Well, I can tell you that the real estate prices are pretty different. We moved from a pretty sizable house to a one-bedroom apartment here in D.C., and I think we're paying three or four times as much. But I won't complain to Californians about real estate.
Yeah.
It's more of a community than people realize. People think of the big buildings and government and the things that go on there, but just the neighborhoods, as I've had a chance to explore a little bit and when we're walking the dogs, really reflect the diversity of people who are here in Washington, whether they came here to serve in government or whether they've been here for generations, and enjoying get to know it, even though it probably will never quite feel like home the way the Midwest is.
All right. Well, we want to ask you a couple other quick questions to wrap up. We like to play some games on this show to have a little fun, get to know different side of you. This game is called the Name Game. This is a one-word answer, super short phrase that comes to mind when you hear the name. So we thought now that you are working with these people regularly, you might have some different perspective on them. So let's start. Here we go. Joe Biden.
Boss.
Kamala Harris.
Extraordinary.
Chuck Schumer.
Leader.
Mitch McConnell.
Negotiating partner, perhaps.
Nancy Pelosi.
Formidable.
Ted Cruz.
Senator.
Okay. We'll take the pause. Chasten Buttigieg.
Love.
Nice. Just as a follow-up to that, do you think the Republicans are negotiating good faith?
Well, certainly, we're having very straightforward conversations. We're clearly coming from very different places, but I'll say when we're looking at the numbers, we're talking through the things we want to see. All the conversations that I've been part of have been very straightforward and constructive in my view. Hopefully, this can lead to a bipartisan outcome, but the most important thing is we got to get something done.
All right. And lastly, let's wrap up with some fun to get to know you a little bit better. This is called Personal Issues. You've played this before. This is where we pay 30 seconds on the clock. We do rapid fire answers. These are questions about what you're doing now in your new life living in Washington, because I know there is so much free time. All you'd have is free time. So we're asking you some questions about what you're doing. Okay, here we go. Ready? What are you watching on TV these days?
Oh, geez. I can't think of the name. It's by the Rick and Morty people, but it's a spinoff. Something Planet.
We'll come back.
Something like that.
What book are you reading?
All right. It's called The Outlaw Ocean. It's about the things that go on in international waters. It's fascinating and troubling.
What music are you listening to?
I'm getting back into a Radiohead kick.
Very nice. And what are you doing for workouts?
Biking more than I used to, and running a lot.
Yeah, we've seen video of you biking. And lastly, favorite food? Do you have a favorite restaurant or anything that you've found yet?
Still kind of eating my way through the neighborhood, so ask me in a few months and I'll probably have a few favorites.
All right. Well, we know, Mr. Secretary, that you love to play music. We know that you love music, so we're playing one of your other favorites, other than Radiohead, Dave Matthews Band, we end with, Ants Marchin', which I know you've seen the DMV plenty of times over the years. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Congratulations on all your success. Great to have you back on The Issue Is.
Same here. Great being back with you. Take care.
More of The Issue Is, including Michael Tubbs, when we come back. More music now from the Secretary himself. He plays multiple instruments, from harmonica to guitar to piano.
Ready?
Our thanks to Secretary Pete. Now, our conversation with Michael Tubbs, the former mayor of Stockton, now in a big role in California.
Something is structurally wrong when people are working two and three jobs, doing all the jobs no one in here wants to do and can't pay for necessities like rent.
Then Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs delivering a TED Talk about his city's adoption of a guaranteed basic income program. He's been working for years to encourage other cities to do just that. And just last week, Governor Newsom announced $35 million for localities to experiment with guaranteed basic income programs. He's asked Michael Tubbs to help lead that effort. Michael Tubbs is the governor's special advisor for economic mobility, an unpaid position. He was first elected as a city council member in Stockton at age 22 and mayor at age 26. One of the youngest mayors in the history of the country. Michael Tubbs, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so how is the governor's plan supposed to work?
Well, first of all, I think we need to just give kudos to the leadership that Governor Newsom has illustrated in terms of understanding the most important investment we can make is investment directly in our people. So with this $35 million allocation, the idea is to partner with local leaders and counties, mayors, county supervisors on the front lines who are piloting the guaranteed income programs. Just this month, we had Mayor Garcetti announce a $24 million project here in the city of Los Angeles that was just ratified by the council this week. And then we also have Supervisor Mitchell, and the LA County Board of Supervisors introducing guaranteed income as part of their LA County poverty reduction strategy. And the idea is for the state to partner with localities that are like what's happening in LA to ensure that guaranteed income builds the evidence base and really illustrates to people that we can get rid of poverty.
And we've also seen areas like Oakland and Long Beach and Compton and other areas around California that are already experimenting with this. But you are the OG when it comes to this. You experimented with this in Stockton starting in February of 2019. You had private companies fund it. Let's put up on the screen exactly what you did. You gave $500 a month for 24 months to 125 people living in neighborhoods at or below Stockton's median household income. They could spend it on whatever they wanted. So now this has happened. Now we've studied what happened. And how did it work?
Well, I think it works the way most people who understand working people and how the economy works would expect. That people didn't take the money and stop working. In fact, those who received the guaranteed income, according to our outside independent evaluator, were two times more likely to find full-time employment and two times less likely to be unemployed. We saw that people spent the money the way you and I spend money, not on drugs and alcohol and vices, but on cars, on childcare, on food, on literal necessities. And we also saw sort of the positive health impacts, that people were less stressed, less anxious, and more able to do the things we want people to do, to be good parents, to be good partners, and to be good neighbors. And I think it's because of that success, we started a group called Mayors for a Guaranteed Income, which now has over 50 mayors from across this country who are saying, like Mayor Garcia and Mayor Schaft and Mayor Brown and Mayor Garcetti, who are some of our founding mayors, that now is the time for a guaranteed income policy at the federal level. And at the local level, we will test, we will push, and we will lift up stories of our constituents. Because again, no one should live in poverty in the United States of America. I think it's a national shame and a disgrace, and we're doing all we can to correct that.
What we have heard, though, from a lot of people now coming out of this pandemic, especially in the restaurant industry, this week I talked with Wolfgang Puck, talked with Andrew Gruhl, famous chefs on this, that it's really hard to hire right now because unemployment has been extended and that people are not joining the workforce because of it. I know these are kind of different, but the concept is still the same. Should the government be giving people money, and does it disincentivize people to work?
Yeah, I would argue based off the data from what we saw in Stockton that a guaranteed income does not this make people not want to work because no one could live off $500 a month, right? And I also think that in terms of what we're seeing in particular with this crisis, that there's a bunch of factors that go into why people may not be going to work. For some, it may be the unreliability of the hours. For some, it may still be concerns with health, concerns with the health risk as we try to reach herd immunity and get more people vaccinated. And I would also say, and no disrespect to my friends in the small business community, but if $300 a week in unemployment insurance is enough for your employees to not go back to work, you need to raise the floor. You need to raise your wages. And I think as a proud champion of working people, it's a good thing when people have more agency and are able to decide sort of which type of working conditions they will and won't accept and conditions that really reflect their dignity. And the last thing I'll say is I know the recent report talked about how much jobs have been created and how many more people are going to work now that we're beginning to open up. So I think it's something that we should study, but we should also be very clear. The issue isn't with a guaranteed income and or unemployment insurance as for why people aren't going back to certain types of jobs. The issue may be with hours, maybe with worker conditions, and maybe with pay.
I appreciate your use of the issue is there. That was very nicely done. Thank you for
the
plug. Thank you. By the way, yeah, new report out this week showing that 40% of jobs created in the entire country in the last month created right here in California. So you have been working with mayors around California. This concept, though, of what was referred to as a universal basic income got a lot of national attention when Andrew Yang advocated for it during his presidential run. He talked about it often on our show. Talk about what it would mean if Andrew Yang was elected New York mayor, the biggest mayor in the country, and implemented it there, and what he's meant to the movement.
Yeah, I think Andrew Yang has done an incredible job of sort of elevating basic income as a discourse. And I know that in looking at his plan for guaranteed income for the city of New York, one that's focused on poverty reduction, a lot of folks who worked on the Stockton plan helped devise that. So I think that having another mayor who's part of Mayors for a Guaranteed Income is a good thing, particularly in the largest city in the country. And I think it goes well with sort of, again, Mayor Garcetti, in LA, Mayor Kearney in Philadelphia, Mayor Bottoms in Atlanta, Mayor Cantrell in New Orleans, the constellation of mayors, many from large cities who are saying that we don't have to have poverty in this country and we should have an income floor.
Well, up next, we want to get to know Mayor Tubbs a little bit better. His life story really is extraordinary. It's been featured in not one but two different documentaries. And as we go to break, some music I thought of for you. This is Bruce Springsteen's We Take Care of Our Own, which I think is kind of at the heart of what you're talking about here. So more with Mayor Tubbs after this.
I think that quote, be the change that you wish to see in the world, is super important because oftentimes people get scared to try to make change because it's like, well, what if it doesn't work? The bigger question is, what happens if you don't do anything?
Then Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs, the main subject in the HBO documentary Stockton on My Mind. It followed his 2020 mayoral race, which he ultimately lost. He's writing about his incredible life story in an upcoming book. It is called The Deeper the Roots. It is available right now for pre-order. We are back with Mayor Michael Tubbs. Welcome back. Folks in Stockton watching right now, very familiar with your story. There are a lot of people outside of Stockton that may not be. So can you give us like a really short version of your unlikely rise?
Yeah, born and raised in Stockton, California, Stockton's home. And I was born in the part of the city I did a lot of work in as an elected official, the south part of the city, a part of the city that has incredible people, but also incredible challenges that are because of policy failures, the investment decisions made by former government officials, et cetera. My mother, she had me as a very young person. She was in high school, and my father is still incarcerated. So all the issues we talk about now with the governor in terms of economic mobility and opportunity, the issues I worked on as mayor of Stockton are all things I experienced personally. I was lucky enough to go to Stanford. While at Stanford, studied, got my master's and bachelor's, interned for President Obama. And at the same time, one of my family members was murdered in Stockton in a homicide. And that caused me to run for city council during my senior year in college. And I spent my entire 20s as a local government official, governing through COVID, governing through a Trump presidency, governing as the city had declared bankruptcy in 2012, and just learned so much about what it takes to make change and accomplish a lot, including a 40% reduction in homicides, second most physically healthy city, all-American city 2 years, list goes on. So very thankful for that experience, but not sure I missed it as much as I thought I would because that was some tough work.
Yeah, well, you became this really big national star. President Obama endorsed you. You met with Senator Harris. Oprah gave you money, all spending time with you. You lost your election. You had a blog in Stockton that targeted you relentlessly that no doubt hurt you. But do you think that all the attention you got nationally may have hurt you at home as well? And what are some of the biggest lessons you learned from your loss and that you take away now?
Yeah, well, I would say that disinformation unfortunately works, particularly as you mentioned, I was the youngest mayor of a major city in American history. I was the first Black mayor of the city of Stockton, not because there was never a Black person qualified to be mayor, but because there's some biases. There's some institutional racism, et cetera. So I think that all the attention was great in terms of lifting the profile of the city, but I think it also made me vulnerable to some of the false attacks about sort of not being really rooted in the city in terms of thinking I'm better than. And we all know that, particularly in history, there's whole books written about how when people get too big for their britches or when Black people particularly are seen as uppity, that can have negative consequences. So I think I just really did not think enough about sort of how bringing money into the city or having attention about the positivity and the positive things happening in the city could actually harm me politically. But there's not a single thing I would have done differently. Yeah. Because I always tell people, if we lost fighting for poor people, fighting for dignity, increasing opportunity, creating scholarships, that sounds like a win to me.
So you're working with the governor now in an unpaid role. You got the book coming out. What's next for you?
I am going to keep working and fighting for a country that works for everyone. And in the interim, making sure that California, the Golden State, has opportunity for everyone. So it looks like the continued advocacy work with the work with the governor, but also still leading Mayors for a Guaranteed Income, with 50 mayors all saying, how do we get to a federal policy for guaranteed income? It looks like sort of working with and supporting leaders and entrepreneurs as they create products and companies that do no harm and actually make the world better. And it looks like continuing to being, again, a relentless squeaky wheel about how the fact that we don't need poverty in this state, we don't need poverty in this country, and that the United States, as written on paper, is beautiful. And how do we make that beauty a reality for everyone in this country? So I'll be doing that until I die.
All right. You know, we like to play a game called Personal Issues on this show. It's your first time here. This is 30 seconds, rapid fire answers about you and a lot of pop culture stuff here. All right. So here we go. Ready? What are you binging on TV right now?
What am I binging on TV? I'm terrible at this. I love All American. And I love This Is Us. And I love Snowfall.
All right. What book are you reading?
I just finished my wife's book, The Three Mothers, and I'm working on editing my book.
Okay, smart answer. What are you listening to music-wise?
J. Cole, The Offseason, amazing album, brilliant.
Who is your role model?
Marion Wright Edelman.
Explain why.
She founded the Children's Defense Fund. She's been doing this since she was doing the sit-ins with Howard Zinn in the 60s. She was Hillary Clinton's mentor. She's one of my mentors, and she's still 50 plus years later, hasn't got tired. And she told me when I was getting tired, she was like, you're just getting started, and it's such a privilege to do the work that you're doing. And that has stuck with me ever since.
Well said. All right. Well, you mentioned that you enjoy J. Cole. So as we go to break, some J. Cole, this is Hunger on Hillside, just for you. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is where we see your dance moves. I'm out of time for now, and I gotta go, but not as badly as President Biden wanted to go this week. Did you see this one trending online? The president behind the wheel of an electric truck. We'll see you next time. And see you later, Mr. President.
Our thanks to Michael Tubbs, to Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and to you for listening. Hope you'll join us next week. In the meantime, hope you'll connect with me in social media at Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. See you next time for more of The Issue Is.